recorded live.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Another week. What week would this be, Rodney?
Now, you got me. Don't get me lying. Episode 130-something.
130-something. That's a lot of Tuesdays. That's a lot of Tuesdays. And we've talked about a lot. We've covered a lot of ground.
Yes, sir.
A lot of ground, a lot of good stuff. We're going to talk about some other things tonight, and we may revisit some things. Only ground rule tonight, people, no profanity. Everything else is legal. Tonight's topic is going to war for your marriage, and you're the only one on the battlefield.
Woo!
Wow. Is that crazy?
I thought you always would never leave your fellow man behind.
Yeah, you're right. I had a coworker come in my office the other day, and they've probably been married, I think, 10 years plus, maybe 15 years, something like that. And she said they were getting a divorce, her and her husband, because they've been going through it. You know, I was a little disturbed because, you know, that's the first I heard of it, but I asked, I said, have you all ever sought marriage counseling? She told me no. And I'm like, you've been married 10 years plus, and you've never got help? And she was like, no. I said, well, how about now? Get some help. See if you can, you know, save your marriage. She said, no, we're pretty much done. We're done. We're to the point now where, you know, we're happy in our new situation as being separated and divorced. I mean, but how does that happen? How do you get to a situation where you were once this unit, and then you let it go without even trying to save it? I mean, is that safe to say? Because I may be out of line. Is it safe to say that they didn't even try to save it?
I would say definitely. I've been there myself.
You know, I mean, but what does that say to the union of marriage in that situation where it's okay to roll out a free? I mean, she said that's the only thing they agreed upon is a divorce. And I'm like, okay, so that's the only thing you agree upon, but why can't you agree on trying to save it and exhaust those options? You know, and again, that was out of the question. But, you know, Andrew, help me out with that.
Well, you know, my situation was, you know, well, see, a lot of times you don't see the warning signs before they're there. And I just thought it was a rough spot. We were arguing a lot and stuff. And she woke up Sunday morning, September 29th, 2002, and said, I don't want to be your wife anymore. I'm done.
Wow, that's almost 9 years to the day.
Yes, it is.
Yep.
That's exactly right. And
how do you react when somebody just says, I'm done?
You say, what do you mean you're done? I'm done. I don't want to be your wife anymore. First, you don't believe it, you know, and then my reaction was, what do you mean you're done? How do you just walk away from 10 years and that's that? She says, I'm done. And I said, I mean, don't you want to get some help? Don't you want to try to do it? She said, no, there's no point. I'm done. She said, it would be a waste of time and money. I'm done. I don't want to be your wife anymore.
How much of that was real, do you think? I mean, I'm talking genuine, I don't want to be your wife anymore, or just anger taking over her
family. It was anger. There was unforgiveness, anger, pain. And then she, you know, I didn't know it at the time. She was involved in another relationship. And, you know, this was that and that kind of thing. But, you know, I didn't realize that at the time. But There was a lot of hurt and anger because I had been an a-hole, and she was tired of. I was the dude in control, and she was tired of me being in control, and now she was going to take control back.
Mm.
She said, "You will not control me anymore."
Wow. Wow.
It's now, over, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Now, prior to that, within the 10 years, and I don't mean to be throwing you out there like that, but
all right.
Prior to that, within the 10 years, how many times did you have a third party, a mediator?
Me once, and then once that I know of with her, I don't know, could have been more. You know, women are a lot sneakier than we give them credit for.
Was it effective, or no? Well, I mean, you know, obviously you still got divorced, but.
When you say a third party, are you talking about an affair?
No.
Oh, okay.
A third party, a counselor, a...
Oh, okay. Well, no. During the 10-year, none. Zero. And then when she told me it's over, I said, well, don't you think we should try to get some help? And she said, no, I'm done. And, you know, I said, that doesn't make sense. You know, we talked to the pastor. I mean, you don't just end a 10-year, you know, relationship like that. And she said, it's a waste of time. I'm done. Well, I finally convinced her to come see the pastor, and I was like, okay, well, you know, maybe he can say something. And we met with the pastor, and she said, I'm done. I don't want this marriage anymore. And he said, well, you know, maybe you should, you know, I know some Christian counselors. Maybe you should go. She said it would be a waste. I don't understand it. There's no point in that. I'm done. So she finally said, fine, if you want to go, I'll go, but it's going to be a waste of your time and money. It's whatever. And that following Monday, New Life has a ministry that they have a counseling, and I called them up and got an appointment, said, I got to see you now, you know, because this is just, you know, just like crazy. And so they got me in, and we sat there, the counselor was there, and she said, well, you know, what's going on? And I told her, well, you know, 3 years ago, whatever it was, I had an affair and this and that, and, you know, it stopped it, and, you know, hadn't thing, you know, not going back into that and, you know, wanted to make my marriage work. And now she says, you know, she's tired of it, and I really want to see if we can try to do some things to make this work. And I'm willing to do whatever it takes to make this work. And the counselor said, well, that's great. That's great. That sounds good. And so she turned to my wife and said, well, what about you? And she said, I'm done. And the counselor said, don't you want your marriage? And she said, no, I'm done. And the counselor said, well, there's really not much I can work with.
Yeah. I mean, he's probably wondering why she was up in it.
Right.
Yeah, so she just blocked off everything in her mind, I guess, just like, all of the good and the bad in the past, she just wiped it out.
As a matter of fact, if you'd ever spoken to her, and probably even today, I'd done nothing right and nothing good in the whole 10 years.
Wow.
And I was called for everything, and, you know.
Wow. Okay, so basically, what this title talks to me about, it speaks to me about being alone in your marriage. Going to war for your marriage, and you're the only one on the battlefield. You're alone in your marriage. And
well,
maybe to that point, she may, and I'm just guessing, because sometimes people feel that way. They feel alone, even though they're not. You know what I mean? Because maybe they're not getting their way. Maybe you don't see eye to eye. Or maybe they just don't understand the union of marriage, the whole give and take part. You know. But do you think that she had probably felt to the point where she was alone in her marriage, so saying goodbye was just a formality at that point?
Yes. At that point, by that time, she had gotten to the point where she's like, I'm through, I'm done, you know. You know, that's that. You know, I've screamed and hollered, and this is the same woman that said to me, what would you do if I left you? And I said, you know, you can be replaced.
Mm.
You know, so all of that played into, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Wow. Anybody else got anything on that?
No, but what could have been something that you pushed aside, which pissed her off more? Like, she was asking for you to help?
Well, actually, in retrospect, there was a lot of deep-seated issues coming into the marriage. The same things that she said to me were the same things she did with her ex-husband, and there was a lot of unresolved issues with inside of her, and basically she was like, well, I'm not going to get hurt anymore. I've been hurt. I've seen this, done that. You're not going to hurt me. I'm done. I'm going to be the one that's hurting you.
So
that's
so
pretty much
root cause. So you never got to the root cause of really why she was bringing her first marriage into the second marriage.
Well, first of all, you know, we got married in a crazy, crazy way. I was like, you know, in between some snatch, and it was convenient, and she was married at the time, and I was going through a divorce, and her husband was over in Korea, and she was screwing one of the guys I used to work with, and I didn't really care. It didn't matter to me, you know. Dude was just getting some snatch, so we would just go over and get high together, you know. And we lived in the same apartment complex, so, you know, and, you know, I know some of y'all never got high, but, you know, you get high, you get horny, you know what I mean? And so, you know, you're getting high, one thing leads to the next, and she's like, you want to hit it? I'm like, yeah. She's like, you can't kiss me, but you can hit it. I was like, fine, I want to kiss your behind anyway. I mean, that was the relationship, you know what I mean? And then when her husband rolled back from Korea or Japan, wherever he was, I was like, I'm done, you know, okay, you know, I'm done. And I wasn't going to, you know, mess with it. And then about 3 weeks later, she knocked on my door, and all she had was a trench coat. All she had on was some trench coat and some short shorts, and I was like, all right, cool, you want me to hit it? I'll hit it. I mean, that's where I was in my life, you know what I mean? And then a couple months later, she was like, she was a Christian. She said she was a Christian. I didn't care if she was a Hare Krishna. If I was getting some snatch, that was all that mattered. And she came to me and she said, I was talking to God and asking God if I should make my marriage work, and God sent me you. I was like, oh, okay, cool. As long as I'm getting a snatch. And that's how it went, you know, And after a while, started shacking up because she was living somewhere and couldn't deal with it. And one thing led to another, and that's what happened. And then one day, decided to go to a church, and the pastor came over and said, "If y'all gonna live together, you got to get married." So that's how we got married.
So your that first marriage was just based off of sex and nothing else, really.
It was what it was. You know, it was just convenience. You know, so. But the funny thing was that when she left and my whole life fell apart, then I got saved. And I fell head over heels in love with my wife, and I wanted to make my marriage work. And for the next 18 months, I did everything I could to make my marriage work, and she didn't want any parts of it. So that's where the real changes came in me.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, she told the pastor, the counselors we were working with, he's got you duped, man. He ain't really saved.
Wow.
To this day, she doesn't believe I'm saved. Y'all hear me talk a lot about how I hate religion, and it's because my ex-wife was so religious, she could quote the scripture upside down and backwards. And then the funniest thing was, I saw the repeat happen when she said to me, I told you what she said to me when I was messing with her, and she said God had sent me, you know, into a marriage, you know, so that she was supposed to leave her husband and come with me. And fast forward 10 years later, and she stood there with me, and she said, I was talking to God, and I asked God if I should make this marriage work, and she said, and God sent me this other dude, so that's why I'm not supposed to make the marriage work. And I went, wow, I'm hearing the same thing verbatim 10 years later coming at me now. And that's when I started to understand she had a lot of stuff that she carried in and never dealt with.
Wow.
So, but
Yeah, that's unfortunate, but I mean, you know, we live, we learn from that because you definitely got past it.
Yes.
Sure.
In a great way.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I have to say the third party worked for me. It was a case of, I think, you know, I was telling you last week, I said, you know, the first 5 years is the honeymoon. Everything goes right. You know, you love each other. You haven't, you know, you're swinging off the chandeliers. You're kissing each other and saying, I love you. When you walk out the house and go to work, you call each other 5 times a day during, you know, while they're at work, texting now, whatever. Then, you know, the first 5 years, going out every night. But then you got the kids involved. The kids are getting older. You got more bills. You know, increase in salary, less time away from home, less time away from each other. And you're still trying to do those honeymoon things, and it affected our marriage. You know, the outside influences, and when I say outside influence, I'm talking about family, you know, mother-in-law, mother, whatever you want to call them, sisters, brothers. And it got to us. It got to the point where we were ready to walk. I was through. I was ready to walk. She was ready to walk. But we got to the point where we said, listen, we need to go see this third party. And I'm not talking about the minister. I don't pay for this. You know, we're going to get this insurance. We're going to get a professional. And we're going to go and see if we can work this out. Because we're unable to work it out together. I mean, if we, every time we try, you know, we're yelling and screaming, darn it, throwing things at each other type of argument. So, you know, 8-year marriage, we did it. And we only went for 1 month, 3 weeks, once a week. And he figured it out right away. And once he told us what our problem was, that one little thing was, you know, a thorn in our marriage, was ready to break us up. Once we got that thorn out, you know, our marriage has been great ever since. But the thing was is that he had to dig deep, and he had to embarrass both of us by bringing out that thorn, which I guess in arguing, you put that defense mechanism up, so you really don't want to get to the real truth. Because that's going to bring up old things. And once we were able to bring it through him and not speak it to it to each other, he called us both out. Then once we realized what the problem was, man, we solved that problem real quick, and it's been love ever since.
Let me ask you a question, because you said something that I think can be key. Maybe, maybe not, but you said that you didn't take it to the minister. You took it to a professional. What do you mean? Like someone that's got a degree in marriage counseling, if there is such a thing? I mean, what do you mean by that?
Yes. I went to somebody who was licensed as a, I guess what you call them, a psychologist or therapist, you know, who deals directly with marriages. And I went to him because, one, he doesn't know me. He doesn't know my wife.
Sure.
Right? So he's biased. He's not going to pick sides. Two, he's a neutral person that we could care less if we ever see again. So we could be ourselves, act crazy, and who cares after we leave what he really thinks about us. We come to you to help us save a problem.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
And I think that worked out best then, because when I wanted to go to the pastor, I mean, she wanted to go to the pastor, I'm like, well, I'm more in church than you are. He might be biased on me. We might not get a fair shake.
And not only that, but you have to deal with the embarrassment factor. One of the things that Glenn and I deal with a lot of times is people in church don't want other people in church to know what's going on. And they just want to keep it like everything's perfect. They don't want anybody else in their business.
Sure.
And we, you know, unfortunately.
Same thing.
What did you say?
I said my wife was the same way when we went. You know?
And unfortunately, people won't seek help, and then everybody's in your business because everybody knows what's going down then. You know, you get divorced, everybody knows what's going on.
Right.
So,
right.
But we see that a lot where people in the church don't want to reach out to those in the church because they're like, well, geez, I gotta come here every Sunday and see this person. And you know, I don't want this person, or don't even know if they can trust that you know they're not gonna start gossiping or whatever it happens to be.
Yeah, but that's that's maybe twice a week max that you're gonna see these people.
I'm telling you, we've seen it a lot where just like you said, look, this is somebody that we don't ever have to see again.
Yeah,
but can you trust that person to keep their mouth closed?
But you couldn't care less if you don't know the person.
That's right. But in the church, it may slip out. That person might tell their husband, they having problems in the marriage, and then it gets out. And then now everybody looking at y'all funny in the church.
Okay.
Or outside of the church. So,
was it a Christian counselor that just wasn't in your church, or was it just a secular counselor that's what they did for a living and no real vested interest in your marriage, just want to get to the root of the issue?
Well, mine, it was not. I mean, he could have been Christian. I didn't even get in his business that way. I thought he was licensed. My insurance paid for it. Let's go and handle business. And the funny thing was, is when you walked in, we mad at each other. Silence in the car, draw going there. You go in, we silent, sitting down. I'm reading the magazine he got there, and she's sitting there on the phone or whatever. We go in the back. And we start yelling at each other. I thought he was scared. I thought the man was scared. Because we argued just like we did if we were at home. But we argued through him. Our focal point was to him and not to each other. And, he as a man he was, he just started writing down notes. And the next thing you know, he started figuring it out. He started asking questions. He stepped in. He says, "All right, you be quiet. Let me talk to her. Let me talk to you." And he figured it out. But to be honest, I did not ask if he was a Christian or not, because at that point I could care less. All I knew was I'm giving you money for helping.
Wow.
Because I needed the help. Because the next step was what. My problem was, and it was me, my wife always wanted to go to counseling. And
yeah.
It was me the one saying, I don't need no counseling. Even when we got married, we didn't do marriage counseling.
And that's what we see more than not, that the guy, like, hey, I don't need counseling. If you want to go, you go.
Yeah.
The problem, you got the problem.
If you don't know me by now, then why are we getting married? That was my whole thing. It's like, you know me. So if you don't know me by now, why are we getting married?
But
I wasn't in the right frame of mind as I am now.
Sure, sure. Now, let me ask you a question, honestly. If you had to go see a counselor again, would you go back to that same person?
I'd recommend it to somebody right now. It's the point. I could tell you exactly where his office is, but I couldn't tell you his name to save my life.
Gotcha. Now,
he did that one job for me, and that was it. I wasn't trying to build a relationship with him or anything. I was just like, man, help me.
Yeah. So, let me just throw this question out, because there are a lot of people, just like Andrew said, you see more and more of the men not wanting to go counseling, and women initiate it. And if they're initiating it, they're initiating it for a reason, because there's a lack of something in that household. Okay, so for a man to feel comfortable to go, because he may not want to go. If he feels comfortable to go, what advice would you tell him? Go see somebody in your church, you know what I mean, or go see a professional.
Well, first thing, you gotta relax his pride, you know, because, you know, like they were saying earlier, is that most of the time the wife, generally speaking, doesn't have much of a problem with going, but the man does, and that's, a pride issue. So, I mean, first and foremost, I think you have to break down the fact that to go see anyone and, be vulnerable and expose yourself, you have to relax your pride, and you have to acknowledge that you got some issues. You know,
sure.
It's not all about her. So I think the first and foremost is say, hey, you got to relax the pride a little bit, you know, just to get that opening so it can be actually beneficial for the relationship. Because if you just go just to be sitting there and just to go through the motions, then it's not going to be effective.
Right, and that's what my ex-wife did. So fine, I'll go. But I don't, matter of fact, she never had a problem. I was the one that had all the problems. Okay, and one of the things, matter of fact, we counseled with a couple tonight before I got on this call. And, I say the same thing we say to every couple. All right, this is not, you're not wrong, you're not wrong, both of you are. It's never one person. It's always both, because there's always a reaction, an action and a reaction, an action and a reaction, you know. And
can you pull your car over? Because I see your headlights.
Huh?
I need you to
pull your car.
He's pulling up in his driveway.
just make a U-turn and go back the other way. You know what I mean? Hey, but how does that happen, really? How does that happen? And I'm asking you because...
It happens because of what Rodney said, pride. I had to be humbled. And when I was humbled and I got to look at me and what I had become, it was really horrifying. But for all those years of my life, I never looked at me. I was fine.
Gotcha.
But pride comes before the fall. And I know a couple right now, we counseled over a year ago, and he's so full of pride that he wasn't willing to reach out. And now, instead of him being honest, and here's the deal. Generally, if we can make it past the third session, there's hope that there can be some real work done. Now, what P-Town talked about was both of them were hungry to make the marriage work.
Sure.
But if that's not the way most people come in. Most people come in, one person says, we got a problem, the other one's dragged in. Okay? Or the other one says, I'm leaving, and the other one says, oh, okay, well, you're leaving. Oh, let's work on it now. That's usually the guy's deal. Okay?
Yeah.
And she's like, if we don't do this, I'm leaving. So he's coerced to coming, whereas... Patrice was saying, look, we got a problem, let's get this solved. Both of them wanted to solve the problem. Okay, they didn't know what the problem was, but they knew there was a problem. Most people don't come in that way. Most people, one person is living in quiet desperation, screaming at the top of their lungs, whether verbally or not verbally, that we have a problem and the other one doesn't hear them. And usually it's the guy.
Wow.
It works.
And if they can get past, usually if they can get past that third session, because really the issues are not usually what they're arguing about, all right? The issue is usually a symptom of what the problem is.
Mm.
And you have to dig down to get to the core of the problem. If you can dig down and start unpeeling the onion, you'll get to the core of the hurt. It may be something in the marriage or maybe something before the marriage.
Sure.
Okay? The core of the hurt tonight was the guy had some hurts from his first marriage, and he wasn't going to be punked again.
Gotcha.
And because he wasn't going to be punked again, he was punked in his first marriage, and he wasn't going to be punked again, and he wasn't going to allow this new wife to punk him, and she's just going to have to deal with him. And he's going to do his thing. Well, that left her lonely. You know, but, you know, and the situation that happened that caused the explosion didn't have to do with what the issue was. That problem had to do with the depth of what really, you know, the real issues were.
Well, the real issues, right?
Right.
And a lot of times we hear about these issues before the marriage.
And that's what's important. You need to get the premarital counseling.
Sure.
Yep.
Sure.
If you got a good premarital counselor, they'll dig through your past, your upbringing, and pull things out that could point to problems.
Sure. Because it's stuff that probably hasn't been dealt with.
Right. And we show up in marriage with baggage.
For sure.
Okay. And all of a sudden you show up and you drop your 10 bags, and she shows up and drops her 30. And y'all get married.
They all Louis Vuitton.
Yes. My ex-wife had over 300 pairs of shoes. Believe me, I know about Louis. The rest of them. Okay? But I'm telling you that, and that was a symptom of the problem. She was covering her hurt with shopping. Okay? But she dealt with my neglect, you know, with my credit card. You know, my ex-wife had a $1,500 a month shopping budget.
Wow.
And that was just what I knew about. You know, that was the approved budget, you know. So what I'm saying is that what we realize in the years that we've been able to work with so many people, the real deal, and here's, and you guys have heard me, you know, talk about this. Every woman has two desperate, dire needs. Every single woman we've ever talked to. All right? And if we can get this as men, I mean, we can have tremendous marriages. Because every woman, the top two needs that they have, need number one, they need to be loved. And need number two, they need to feel loved. Because you can be loved without feeling that love. Okay? And we found out that every man has two desperate needs. And they're very different than women's. The man's number one need is to be loved. And his number two need is to feel loved. It's the same need, but we receive it in different ways. And our responsibility as a spouse is to study our spouse to find out how to make them feel loved.
Okay. So, and let me ask this question to you, because this gets confusing. So let's just say we love them. We know we love them. We tell them that we love them. But it's not to their standards. Okay. Because sometimes we get it wrong when we think that we're getting it right.
Correct.
We're doing it to the best of our ability.
Correct.
But we're getting it wrong.
Correct.
Can that make them feel alone in their marriage?
Yes, it can. Because what you're doing is you're speaking a language that they can't understand.
Sure.
You're not speaking, let's use their love language.
Sure.
You're speaking Japanese and you're saying, I love you, but they speak English and they don't know what ya-ya-wa-ya-wa-ya means. Okay. My dad, I grew up in a household where my dad never told me he loved me. Okay? He went out and worked and put a roof over your head and food on the table. He never felt like he needed to hold you, hug you, and tell you he loved you. By what he did, he showed you he loved you. That's not how I received love. And I grew up in a household that if I did well, accolades were given and I was shown that love. And if I didn't do well, I was chastised and put down and called all kind of names and things like that. So I learned from a young age the way that you attain love is you achieve. And when you achieve, people love you. And I decided when I left my parents' house, if it hair-lipped a boogeyman, I was not going to fail. I was going to be a successful person in my life. I was going to make lots of money, and everybody would love me.
But I mean, but some would argue that that is kind of symbolic to the way our marriages are today.
Correct.
Because when you say when you achieve, because we like to be shown love too, like you said, but we are physical. They're more emotional, so we like the physical accolades. See what I'm saying? And when we put in our work, cut the grass, do our chores. I hate using the word chores on this show, so please forgive me, because I have chores, had a household. Let's just say our household responsibilities or whatever you want to call it. But when we do those things, then we sometimes get rewarded. Just like you said, that's when we get shown our love that we want from them.
Right. When I pick up the clothes off the floor and make the bed and do the laundry,
yeah,
it's a good night.
It's a good night. I mean, you know.
Now, to me, that doesn't show love. When my wife does the laundry and picks up the house, that doesn't show me she loves me.
Exactly.
For me, for her to spend time with me shows me she loves me.
Yeah.
For her to touch the back of my neck or something or touch my arm, that tells me she loves me.
Yeah.
But for her, I don't know what it is, but if I clean, that turns her on.
Yeah.
That's the weirdest freaking thing.
No, it's just not your household, brother.
Okay.
Well, he done got out. He's in your driveway now.
I'm just saying,
out,
hey, Rodney, you know. Rodney, hold on, man. It's not just my household either.
You're right.
Remember the garage? Don't forget. Remember that garage?
Absolutely, and the basement.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And the things that we never think about. We're like, yeah, I get to it. You know, it might be in the basement. Who even goes in the basement?
Mm-hmm.
Give me an example. A couple that we're working with tonight, okay, all she wanted him to do was to spend time with him, with her.
Yeah.
Okay, he was so busy and this and that. And check this out. Last night they were in the throes of it. He turned the game off and listened to her. You know, I'm talking about the game.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Wow.
And they're talking, she said, and she said, and he turned the game off.
Mm.
And she said, I called him at work today and told him I loved him.
Mm.
Because the game and the sports had become more important than the relationship, and because he was willing to do that act, that act showed her that he loved her. And now she wanted to express it to him.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's love.
That's wild.
Yeah, that game was good last night.
I was like, dude, you turned the game off? He's like, yeah, man. I was like, I said, I got to get a 5 on that, bro.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, now to a woman, that would be no big deal.
Right.
To a guy, that's a major sacrifice. I mean, if you're into the game, you know, knitting. But,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can't even tell anybody that. You can't be like, man, I turned the game off this day.
No, and he couldn't go tell his boys.
No.
He'd be like, what, you a punk? Come on, she can wait. Hey, man. Right?
Yeah, you're telling a good fact there, man.
But it goes back to what we talked about before, you know, priorities. You know, we got to have our priorities in order.
Wow.
And is the game more important? You know, is...
And that's what he finally realized, and this was only the second time we talked to them, but it hit him, and he realized, you know what, she's screaming, and I'm not hearing her. And that's what happens. See, my ex-wife was screaming, and I didn't hear her.
Mm-hmm.
She was screaming, make me feel important and make me feel loved. And I didn't hear her.
That's. Wow.
Yeah. Well, when you say priorities, when you're pissed off, when does priorities become a matter? Because, you know, you can get to the point where She needs counseling. I don't need it. She got to get herself together. I'm straight.
Yeah, but I always say that both people, everybody can benefit from a counseling session. I mean,
because that's how I used to say it. I mean, before I decided to go to couples, I was always like, man, she the one that got the problem. I'm straight.
Hmm. And usually the one that says that, they got more problems than the other one.
For sure. For sure. That's that denial right there.
That's right. That was my
that's
ex-wife. I don't have a problem. You got the problem.
Yeah.
When somebody is in that stance, generally, they're the one with the bigger problem because the other one realizes we need help and I can't solve it. And those were the warning signs that I didn't see.
Hello?
Hello?
No, go ahead.
Hello?
I can hear you. Go ahead.
Yeah, those were the warning signs that I didn't see. Okay, and these are the warning signs. And we need to be in tune, you know. You need to do a marriage checkup. We need to ask our wives, you know what? I want you to be brutally honest. You know, how are you feeling about our marriage? Is there anything that I could do, you know, to make it better?
But, you talked about the signs. What are those signs? You know what I mean? What are those signs that can be prevented? Because, you know, you talk about the topic, going to war for your marriage and you're the only one on the battlefield. It seems like that applies to women in the beginning and men at the end.
Yes.
So in between that time, there's some signs.
Yes.
There's got to be some red flags. There's got to be some something.
Yes.
For a man to wait till the marriage is to the end.
Right, and that's what happens.
He
most
says,
time.
"I'm done." For
right.
him to say, "Okay, now I'm gonna go see a counselor with you."
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Is that saying that the signs weren't properly displayed? That maybe, or maybe he just didn't want to hear it. So
I
why
think,
is he hearing it now?
I think that we get complacent in our marriage, and I think we don't realize that a marriage, like anything else, needs maintenance. Okay, you would not drive your car till the wheels fell off. You'd get an oil change. You'd rotate the tires. You'd change the brakes. But we don't look at our marriages that way. We need to do maintenance on our marriages on a regular basis. Just like we pay attention to anything else of value in our life, we need to pay attention to our marriage. I asked this guy in our first get-together, I said, when was the last time you took your wife on a date? And he couldn't remember.
Wow.
Okay. I said, when was the last time you and your wife took a weekend away from the kids? And she said, our honeymoon.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, a lot of times we don't, you know, we just get complacent. We think, well, we're married now, so, you know, life is going on. I'm going to do my thing. I like doing this. I like doing that. So that's what I'm going to do. I like golf. Okay, I like football. I like basketball, and that's what I'm going to do.
Well,
I'm happy. You know, I spoke to him. I was like, how are you? Yeah, I'm fine. Everything's good. And I said to her, you know, how are you? She's like, I'm dying. You know?
So you think that's some pretty much cockiness?
I think that's the way it normally is. It's usually the woman that's screaming, and the guy's like, get over it. Come on. You know, this is part of marriage. We don't have training going in most of the time. I mean, most people don't have, you know, a training class on how to have a successful marriage. If they get premarital counseling, you know, they usually have set the date to get married, sent out the invitations and go, oh, okay, we need marriage counseling to get married? Okay, where do we need to go? Well, trust me, they're getting married.
Regardless. We'll figure everything out later.
Yeah, okay, once you set the date and you start sending those invitations, Jack, you get married. Now, the church may say, well, you know, we won't marry you unless you go through this class. Fine, sign us up. Let's go.
Okay.
We're getting married.
So, How often do you think that couples seek counseling individually on their own?
I don't think there's a situation where you should say, okay, we should seek counseling, this or that. I think you should do maintenance on your marriage at least once a year. When I say maintenance, I'm talking about you two going out on a marriage weekend, a marriage retreat, or, you know, learning about, you know, how to better your marriage at least once a year. You know, in our church, we offer the classes twice a year. We do marriage weekends, different things like that. I think every marriage, at least once a year, should get a refresher course in the basics. Are we on track?
Sure.
My wife and I get the most out of the marriage ministry.
Sure.
Because we're doing it week in, week out, every week. We're meeting with somebody. We're here, there. We're studying. We're this, we're that. And we get the most out of it because it's in our face and it's part of our lives now. And it really has helped our marriage tremendously.
So would it be a form of disrespect if the spouse said, no, I don't want to do that?
Didn't want to go once
marriage
a year?
Maintenance,
some
marriage
type
maintenance,
of marriage?
Any of those things, marriage maintenance, counseling, whatever the case may be.
Counseling isn't in my opinion, counseling is not a maintenance. Counseling is we got an issue that we can't solve. Maintenance is so we learn how to solve the issue so they don't get to a counseling state. Okay? If you don't want to do maintenance on your marriage, you don't understand how important it is to – I mean, you're just not looking at it in a way to understand that. I mean, it is just – it's wise to get maintenance. You know, I mean, you get your teeth clean. You don't wait till your teeth fall out to go to the dentist. You get a checkup. You don't wait till your blood pressure pops your head off. Okay, you do this, you know, on your job. You know, they have training and retraining on a regular basis. You don't just get a job and don't get any more training for the next 50 years. You get refresher courses and maintenance on everything that we do in our life, except our marriage.
Okay. So let me give you an example. I would think that this call is a form of marriage maintenance for men.
I would agree.
Okay. Now, if our wives don't follow suit and get this same type of support or maintenance, what does that say about their commitment?
There may not be that available, or there may be other avenues.
It's available. Women talk more than we do.
Okay. I wouldn't say this is the avenue you have to take. I would sit down, if it was me, okay, and do you know what? My wife and I do this.
Okay.
My wife and I, once a year, go to some type of marriage training. Okay, just because we study all the time doesn't mean we don't need other guidance. Okay, we go and get the information and to refresh our marriage. Okay, that's part of our contract. This is what we're going to do every year. We're going to go. We're going to take a weekend wherever it happens to be. It might be in Baltimore. It might be here. It might be there. We're going to go to a marriage conference for a weekend someplace, and we're going to get a refresher course and hear somebody else's perspective, because, man, hearing me talk all the time ain't where it's at.
Sure.
That's part of what we've agreed to do to protect our marriage, because there's nothing more important to us than our marriage.
Sure. Which is good, but I'm talking about on a normal situation.
Whoa, what are you saying? I'm abnormal?
Well, no, but you're in the field. You see what I'm saying? You're in the field of saving marriages, which is
okay.
A good thing.
So are you?
You know, yeah, exactly. So. But what I'm saying is, let's just say you're not, and you're on this call, okay?
Right.
And it's kind of like going to the gym to work out,
right?
And you do all upper body,
right?
You don't do any legs, okay? You look big, but you can't take a punch,
right?
He's gonna buckle. I just believe that it should be both parties,
yes,
that are going to get stronger for the marriage, and not just one.
Yes.
Even though the man, the head is first, and he should go out and secure his position with knowledge, but I believe it should be both parties.
I agree. It should be both parties, but sometimes it's only one, and sometimes, you know, that set of footprints needs to be us carrying our wives.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause
or vice versa.
Yeah. You know, a brother that gets on this call, and I think he's on here tonight, always talks about training on that for them, 101. Peyton, what is it you say all the time?
He said internship.
Internship. It's internship. It's got to be on both sides. You know what I'm saying? And the marriage maintenance piece is great, Andrew, but it's got to be on both sides. Because one could be getting more advanced and the other one is staying in the same position. And then you're going
to... Right. There's no doubt that is the best case scenario. That's not always the way it's going to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of dying partners out there because... You know, they're coming to church and getting fed, or they're going to a conference and getting fed, and their spouse is like, I don't have a problem. You need to go, you go.
Sure. Good words. Now, you talked about before something that was key, and I just want to touch on that a little bit about the past.
Excuse me.
Yes, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I just kind of got on the call,
sure.
And I know the brother Andrew, that's him speaking before, right?
Yeah.
All right. And what's your name?
Tony.
What do y'all do that y'all both are in the line of business of saving marriages, if you don't mind me asking? I might have missed that earlier.
He's actually a marriage counselor, and I'm actually the founder of this call.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So,
all right. All
you know,
gotcha.
I mean, we are pretty much pro-marriage. I just
gotcha.
Put it that way. Yeah.
Gotcha. I had a question. With that one, maybe you can help me. You were talking about, trying to see if I'm trying to word it correctly. When seeking counseling, okay, what about sometimes when the woman is unrealistic in her, like they're very theatrical,
sure.
I find, you know, with things that's going wrong or when things are right. You know, I mean, they're overly emotional about things. So,
yeah.
I mean, like, how do you combat that with counseling or something like that? I'm sorry if I got you off topic a little bit, but
no, we're good. We're right on topic.
I'm just trying to like pinpoint how to say it. It's just that would they be realistic if you sit there and they're talking about things like that's just so far to the left. On
yeah.
what's wrong or whatever, or not being very honest, even when they're there in counseling, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
How do you combat that? Or
and also, I think also taking things that really aren't issues and making them issues. You know, things that may not be a deal breaker, and turn it into a deal breaker or something like that. And I my experience is that's what that third party has to sit down and dissect what they're saying. You know what I mean? And say, well, maybe this isn't right. What would you say, Andrew?
I would say that if you have a good counselor, they're going to be able to get through that. If you have somebody that understands what's going on, they're going to help her through that. There's some people that, I mean, you know.
Sorry about that.
That little things, you know, happen and set off minefields. Usually what that means is there's some underlying hurts that haven't been dealt with. If you've ever been with somebody that you do one little thing, and I mean it's an, you know, atomic bomb exploding, usually what that means is you've touched an area inside of them that there's been hurt in the past and they haven't dealt with it. And you just touched it, or it seemed familiar to them, and they just go off the freaking, you know, reservation on you. That's usually what the situation is. Now, there are some people that legitimately have some mental issues, I'm not talking about that. I mean, there's some people that, you know, need to be on medication. You know, they're just, you know, they're manic depression, you know, depressive people, and they go through these wild swings. I'm not talking about that. You know, that's a medical situation, and that person probably needs to be on you know, on some medication. But, you know, people that react to certain things in certain ways, you know, usually the counselor that's with them, you know, can figure out, well, let's figure out why you're reacting this way. Why do you feel this way when you know, he's 5 minutes late and you're acting like, you know, he's totally betrayed you? Why are you acting this way? That's not a normal reaction to that. What's causing that? You know, or, you know, he didn't call you five times today and you're through the roof. That's not normal. Why, you know, so if you can, you know, if you can get down to the core of why something's happening, usually there's something at the core that's leading to that. And it may be something that the husband has done. Or it may be something that happened before the marriage. It may be something that happened in her childhood that she hasn't dealt with. And that's her reaction to that. You know, she may have been abandoned by her father, and because, you know, the husband, you know, isn't checking in five times a day, she's feeling like he's going to abandon her.
And what if it's not any of those things? Could it just be not any of those things, and you're just saying that that person is just crazy?
Oh, there's some crazy people out here.
Yeah,
ain't no
yeah.
doubt. Okay? If somebody has no cause for, you know, for reacting, you know, they may have, you know, manic episodes.
Yeah.
Okay, and they may be delusional. There are some delusional people out here. Okay, but, you know, setting those aside. Now, you know, if you've married somebody, hopefully you've done your homework and you would have spent the proper time to see if this person is this kind of way. Okay, because people just don't get that way. I mean, they're that way or they're not. They don't just all of a sudden get delusional. Okay, if somebody has a medical problem, they can't turn that on and off. And if you spent the proper time, you know, in your dating and courtship, you would have seen these things.
I've got to disagree, though, Andrew.
Okay.
I do. And the reason why I say that, because the brother did use the word crazy, and I respect that, because sometimes that's what we think. When we see something that's totally off the wall, that no matter what you say, it won't get back right. And I do believe that there are things that, you know, they go through, midlife crisis, menopause, things of that nature, depression, whatever it is, that makes their hormones and emotions go buck wild. You know, and then we're sitting there not understanding it to the point where it's like, okay, she has lost her mind. But, you know, what do we do in that situation? Because there are, just like you said, there are people that probably need to be on medication.
I might need to be on medication. I don't think that's any different than if your wife had cancer. You wouldn't say, oh, you're crazy, this and that. No, you'd seek help. You'd first of all, you know, you'd seek help for her and try to find the proper help. And if she needed to, you know, to get that. Now, you know, she may be in that state, and a lot of people in that state are in total denial. And you can't get them to see somebody. You know, that's a tough situation. They won't seek medical or professional help. And, you know, when you get in that situation, that's a tough one, you know.
Because,
you know, we don't live in a country where you can go commit somebody just because you think they're crazy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, not crazy. Let's not belittle the situation, but, you know, just different.
Well, you know, hopefully the marriage is strong enough that you can say, honey, we've got a problem. See, first of all, there's no such thing as your wife having a problem and you not having it.
Exactly.
You have become one. If your wife has a problem, you have a problem. Okay, if you have a problem, your wife has a problem. Okay, so, you know, when we start to think of it as we have become one, and when she's got a problem, I've got a problem, we need to find a solution. One of the challenges is when that other person doesn't want to, just like the call tonight, the name of it, when that other person doesn't want to seek a solution and all it's on you, I mean, I know this is going to sound kind of trite, but that's when you need to seek help and pray and hope that God moves in their heart. You know, I mean, because, you know, you can't make somebody do something they don't want to do.
Wow.
So, like bringing up stuff 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I think that's what gets a lot of men is the frustration of you got to let that go, you know. Why are you bringing up something that happened 15 years ago? I thought we were over that. Why does every time we have an argument, that's the only thing you bring up? I don't know if that's happened to anybody, but it's happened to me a lot back in the day.
Well, one of the things that we have is we have rules of engagement for battle, how to fight fair. And we actually have a contract that we've drawn up that we both signed and agreed to. These are the rules. One of the rules is that once something has been forgiven, it's no longer admissible evidence, and it can't be brought back up. And if you're not going to obey the rules of the conflict, then the conversation ends until you agree to obey the rules that we've agreed to protect our marriage.
Good words.
But how do you get to that? I mean,
how do you get to an agreement on how to protect your marriage?
How do you get the agreement to agree that you're not going to hit me below the belt, hit me with a Mayweather,
well, this,
you know, because you're losing the fight?
We picked this up in one of the marriage seminars that we attended, and the name of the topic was how to fight fair. Okay. And we actually have brought that into the course that we teach, and we call it resolving conflicts. Every marriage has conflicts. If you don't learn how to resolve the conflicts, you'll just sweep stuff under the rug. And after enough time, the stuff under the rug is going to be piled so high, you walk in and you trip over and all the stuff comes jumping out. Instead of learning how to resolve it. Not dealing with something is not resolving it. Matter of fact, not dealing with it, sweeping it under the rug, doesn't make it go away. And you have to deal with each issue, and it always has to come down to, if somebody did something wrong, somebody has to own what they've done. Okay? I'm sorry for doing this. I shouldn't have done it. And that stands on its own, not, I'm sorry I did this, but the reason I did it is you did that. No. So resolving conflicts means somebody has to own up to what they've done. And then the next thing, after they've apologized for doing what they did or hurting that person, then they've got to ask for forgiveness. Will you forgive me for doing this?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, in a perfect world, yes. But in our world, you know, there's still things that come up that shouldn't come up.
Well, I don't live in a perfect world, but once my wife and I have come to forgiveness, if something is brought up and I've done it, my wife says, "Didn't you forgive me for that?"
Okay.
And we hold each other accountable because the marriage is more important than any issue for us. And we actually have a contract that both of us have signed. And one of the stipulations in the contract is once something is forgiven, it's not to be brought back up, you know, as evidence, you know, against me again. Because, you know, that's what happens. You get in an argument and, yeah, but this is what you did to me. Okay, wait, you forgave me of that. Okay, you're breaking the rules. You see, the problem is, some people they want to win the fight and then lose the war because the marriage is damaged. And when you realize, okay, we're doing this to protect our marriage, the marriage is what's important. Let's agree to some rules to protect our marriage so we don't have a conflict and then end up hurting the marriage because of an issue.
Yeah.
The marriage is one thing, and issue is something different, and you've got to keep them separate.
Are there consequences to breaking the contract?
Well, if one of us breaks the contract, we do not, we don't go on with the discussion about what it is. There's times that, most of the time it's me breaking a contract because I'm a pighead. One of the things that we have to agree on is if one of us believes it's not the right time, that we need to call a time, one of us can call a timeout. Okay, now it's got to be resolved that night, but we can say, this isn't a time we can talk about this right now. And that burned me up because I've worked up good mads and we're going to talk now. My wife has had to go get the contract and said, is this what you signed? She knew that if I spoke at that moment, things would come out of my mouth and then things would come out of her mouth that would damage the marriage because I was so hot. In retrospect, I don't even remember what the arguments are about, and we don't, but the damage that's done can last a lifetime. So for us, we have agreed in calm times that our marriage is more important than any issue, and we want to protect our marriage, so these are the things we do to protect our marriage. Now, if you only got one person fighting for it, it makes it very, very difficult. Both people have to be fighting for the marriage. The topic tonight, if you're in this alone and the other person isn't pulling and doesn't want to fight for the marriage and isn't willing to work with you, you're going to have a long, hard, cold road.
So when do you quit?
I quit when I got the divorce papers.
When do you do something else?
So you still continue to try to get your wife on the same page until you see your divorce papers.
I'm not saying what you should do. I'm telling you what I did. I fought until I got the divorce papers. And I realized what she was trying to take. I was like, hey, I ain't no punk. You ain't taking me like that.
So what's the next step if counseling? I mean, you say, all right, we're going to do church counseling. All right, now we're going to a certified licensed counselor. We're going to sit here and work it out. We're going to go on vacation. We're going to do all these things. When is it that you say, this marriage was just not meant to be? That's the $100,000 million, whatever you want to question.
For sure.
I've tried everything, but what if you tried everything was not right, or you didn't do it in the right order? I mean, how do you know? I guess you have done everything right. That you can go to God and say, God, this isn't, I tried everything and it didn't work.
Well, the Word of God says, if, and I'm just going to say, if you're a believer, okay, if you're going to follow and base your life on the Word of God, God says, I hate divorce. Okay? But He does give two outs of a marriage. Okay, one is abandonment, all right, and one is unrepentant adultery. So if you are with somebody that has decided they're going to sleep with the basketball team and they don't repent and humble themselves and say, let's make this marriage work, they just want to live this lifestyle, I mean, you don't have to leave the marriage, but you have cause to leave the marriage. If you are with somebody that says, I quit, I give up, I'm leaving, there's nothing that you can do to change that. And the Bible says if you're with a non-believer and they want to go, let them go. You are called to live in peace. That's the Word of God. Now, if you're not a Christian, I don't know what you're basing your life on, but, you know, I guess you have a different set, you know, of scenarios that you would use to do.
Now, P-Town, were you talking about being in that scenario and she hasn't left yet?
Right.
She hasn't left yet. She hasn't said it's over, none of those things, and you're still trying to figure out, okay, what do I do next?
Yeah, I mean, do you do like the one guy did on his phone at one time and you just go downstairs in the basement for a year until she gets the point? you know, able to, I mean, to show that, you know, you still love her and you're still in this marriage, but we're just going to go sleep in separate rooms, or how do you fix it?
And that is the $64 million question, I would think. I would think. And if the other Rodney was on here, he'd say that, no, we haven't exhausted all the avenues.
I'm on here.
Oh, he is on there. Called him up. Yeah, that's not this Rodney. That's the other Rodney.
Yeah, you know who I'm talking about. I never forgot that one. Yeah, you know. You know, there's, I think that there are so, and again, it goes back to what we talked about earlier, is that as men, we may wait till the 11th hour to go get that counseling and not do the marriage maintenance like Andrew's talking about. So when it comes to that point, okay, like what Patrice is saying, we're going through all these options, we're trying to exhaust everything, and she is not really responding to it because it might be a little too late.
Yeah, I just feel that sometimes men, we may wait, like you said, the 11th hour, where they have already exhausted their 11th hour, 12th hour. So they're on shutdown while you're just trying to, you know, get back and build stuff up. So in that case, you're really on the bad page because you have to start from the ground up where she says, I already tried that. You wouldn't listen to me. You kept brushing it off. You kept saying we're okay when we're not okay. And I tried, and you know, you didn't want to go to counseling when I wanted to go or with the person I wanted to go. You know, you got those, the we is now becoming I. How does that work?
Let somebody else handle that one. Anyone?
Well, I think you have to go back to the beginning. And when you were standing at the altar, it was, you know, the two become one. So you have to try to, you know, get back to that. But, you know, as y'all been stating earlier, is that you have to realize that both parties, you know, have to be, you know, committed. And, you know, if I may, I'll give an example. My wife and I, we built our house 10 years ago this month. You know, the house we live in, we built it, you know, ground up or whatever 10 years ago. 2 years ago, two faucets, my main, you know, on the main level, the, you know, the bathroom that everyone uses if they come over or whatever, on the first floor, that faucet broke and the kitchen faucet broke within the same week. This summer, my kids' faucet in their bathroom broke. Last month, my refrigerator broke. I actually just got it repaired, just got it replaced this Saturday. This month, the sensor in my outside light post broke. So basically, the light just stays on all day long, and I haven't replaced the sensor yet. But last week, my wife's faucet in our master bathroom broke. I haven't replaced that yet either because I still have the last original working faucet left, which is my faucet, you know, in the master bathroom. But finally, just yesterday, one of the springs for my garage door opener broke.
Oh.
And I wasn't even home, you know, so wife was calling me and said, like, you know, I don't know, garage door won't open, you know. Thankfully, neither of our cars were inside because if your spring is ever broke on your garage door opener, you're short. You basically be walking everywhere or hitchhiking until you get it fixed. But in the last 10 years, I've seen some nicer houses, prettier houses, you know, the ones with the nice landscaping, even some new houses that I hadn't seen before. And they even got beautiful houses you can look at on TV and on the Internet. Well, here's my point in saying all that. A lot of times, you know, we covet other people's houses or maybe just a newer house, you know, as if moving there would alleviate all our problems. And, you know, last month, my wife and I actually refinanced our mortgage, and so we got yet another 30-year mortgage. And but here's the point, is that at no time over the years, and most of the stuff has been breaking down over the recent years, thankfully, neither one of us has considered looking at another house or buying another house. We're just like, well, you know, I got on the internet tonight and found somebody to fix my, you know, spring over my garage door. It'll be here tomorrow. So my garage door will be back working. So, you know, the whole point, the gist of what I'm saying is that you have to go back to the original when you were standing at the altar and it was like the two of y'all were going to work it out. And the two become one, and y'all should be on the same page because, like I said, under no circumstances did the wife come to me and say, you know, this house is just crumbling. Seems like every week, every month, it's something that's breaking down. We've been in here 10 years, and, you know, but at no point have we even looked at another house, and neither one of us. You know, I'm not out looking. You know, I'm not saying, you know, oh, I saw this bad house, you know, down the street, they build a new house or whatever the case may be. But I make that analogy because both of us are on the same page, and which I suspect that when all of y'all were standing at the altar, when y'all, you know, the two become one, you know, two shall become one flesh, all that good stuff, I'm sure y'all are on the same page. So I think you have to reflect, you know, back on those moments, those precious, that precious time when you were on the same page, and that's how you get it back to, you know, hopefully focusing on standing your house, you know, and making a new, you know, refinancing your mortgage, you know, whatever. But I hope y'all understand that analogy. But, you know, I mean, literally you have to
refinance first. I understand.
Yeah, I mean, you have to both parties, you know, when my wife, I was like, she wasn't reluctant to sign the refinance paperwork. She was like, where do I sign? I'm in for another 30 years, you know. So, I mean, it's almost like that we're not going anywhere, even though I probably won't be here another 30 years. Maybe I will, you know, at this residence. But, I mean, no matter where we go, you know, she's going to be with me because we're on the same page. You know, we're not at that point when we do start, you know, looking, and I'm back to houses now, but at moving on, you know, from this place. But I just think that with anything, you have to try to get on the same page. And like y'all been saying earlier, is that if you can't, unfortunately, you got to let it go.
Yeah, and I have to agree with you. That's the same analogy that with the cars that Andrew was using, is that for, you know, outside of being us, outside of us, even us just keeping our own health together, we got to do some type of maintenance. You're not going to be the same person you were yesterday.
Right.
Or 3 years ago. You're not going to be in the same position in your marriage you were 3 years ago because hopefully your marriage has developed and grown. Right?
Yeah.
So you can't look at, you can only look at the past to see how your future is going, but you got to continue to, I guess, what was the word, repair the present so that the future can be better for you.
And I think that's the mistake a lot of us make. And, you know, I speak personally. You know, when I moved in, I didn't expect the faucets to all break within 10 years. I didn't expect, you know, the refrigerator to ever break. I never really thought about it. You know, I never really thought, yeah, one day I have to replace this refrigerator because it worked fine for 10 years. And, you know, like you say, we have to go in. Like, I should have went in expecting that I'm going to have this. You know, owning a home is a lot of maintenance, just like a marriage. It's a lot of maintenance. I think that's the mistake that we make, that we go into it thinking, oh, you know, we had the big wedding, the big shindig. We partied, you know, like it's 1999. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, oh, we got to, you know, we're living this thing every day. And, I mean, that's real, you know, but we don't think about that when we're, you know, dancing or whatever at the wedding ceremony, I don't think.
You know, I agree, but it's always kind of tough, someone in my position listening to that. I mean, it makes good sense, and it sounds great, but I guess using your same analogy, you go in, you buy a house, and then all of a sudden you figure out that thing is a money pit,
I mean, you can expect after 10 years, yeah, you're going to, you know, have to replace a few singles, you know, maybe a faucet or two. But I'm talking straight up money pit as soon as you move into that cat. Or, better yet, you figure out, man, I done bought that Amityville house and just got all kinds of stuff floating through here, just bad all the way through. Man, at some point, you might just be better off pulling up the stakes and moving on because, you know, I mean, I hear what you're saying. Yeah, you got a couple of breakdowns here, and you got to expect that. That's going to happen. You got to do some maintenance and hang in there. But, no, like what was that other movie? It was Money Pit. That was it. Was it Tom Hanks?
Yeah.
See, now, within that situation, I mean, you might not want to hold on quite that long. I mean, that's just it might just be a waste of your time and money. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, true that.
So, I mean...
I think that there were signs, you know, when you and maybe there were signs that we didn't research or we didn't care to research or care to explore, you know, more, you know, going in, you know, maybe
that's
there
it.
Was some, you know, red flag. Go ahead, T.O.
No. You just said it that, you know, when buying a house, you're offered a warranty because, you
mm-hmm.
know, something going for you. When you buy a car, they offer you a warranty because you're going to know something's going to break. It's a nice, shiny house and a nice, shiny car, and it looked good, but you know something's going to break. When you're on that altar, you don't know. You don't necessarily because everybody's on their best behavior. And it's hard to be that same person that because you said you got to go back to the altar. It's a little hard because we're not the same people that we were standing at because now we know more things. We've seen more. We've gotten to know these people, the person that we're married to now. So now we got to adjust. Maybe your guard is up. Maybe your guard is not up. Whatever the case may be. So just like you said, Patrice, you have to bring it to date. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Marriage is as is.
As is.
Yeah.
I like that.
If you're buying, quote unquote, into marriage, then you're buying as is. That's the better for worse richer, for sickness and health. That's the as is.
So you better check it out before you sign that line.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
go ahead.
What you can check out. I mean, you do not know everything. I don't care how much checking you do. You do not know everything about that individual because you don't know everything about yourself. So you're doing as is. Irregardless, and to, I think it was T-Hawk who was just saying, you know, banks change throughout the year. It could be in 6 months, it could be in 6 years, but change. They're going to change. Situations going to change. Housing, you know, to Rodney's point, you know, you move from house to house, or apartment to apartment, or from car to car. Different things are going to change. You have kids, you know, you have a boy, you have a girl, you have, you know, twins, whatever the case. Things are going to change, and you know, but it's as is.
That's it. So things change, but the commitment stays the same.
Commitment stays the same.
Yeah. And speaking of commitment, I have to tell this story, if I may, Mr. Host.
Okay.
Within the last 96 hours, I've experienced a whirlwind of emotions because on Saturday I went to a friend of mine's wedding. Young man, you know, great guy, knowing him probably 5, 6, 7 years, whatever. So I went to his wedding. Joyous occasion. Me and the wife had a ball. And then on yesterday, I went to a funeral.
Oh.
And my cousin's wife lost her battle with breast cancer last oh. Thursday, and they funeralized her yesterday. And she was 45.
Oh.
And they were married 18 years. So... And for the last, 3, 4, 5 years, you know, my cousin has been true, you know, head of household, and they have a daughter as well. She's a teenager now. But, I mean, literally, you know, we talk about, you know, going to war for your marriage when you're the only one on the battlefield. And what about when one of your soldiers is severely wounded? And they can't, you know, they they can't help you. You know, like in this case, he was, like I say, fighting breast cancer, and, you know, they, of course, stayed married all the way up until the end, and he did what he could as far as care for her and you know, see her, and he didn't step out on her or anything like that. So, you know, what about, you know, when you talk about going to war, you know, for your marriage, when one of the soldiers becomes severely wounded?
Well, Rodney, I think there's a bit of a difference, though. And the reason why I say that is because if me and you go to war and you get shot in the leg, I got to carry you to safety.
Mm.
I got to make sure you get to safety. But if me and you are scheduled to go to war on Thursday and you don't show up,
Wow.
I got an issue with that.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying? And now I'm on the battlefield. I got to fight this war, and you're not even here.
Wow.
You see, if you show up, you know what I mean, you get hurt, okay, then your example is what it is. I got to carry you through it.
Yeah.
By hook or crook, I have to carry you through it. But if you don't even show up, you know, there's nothing I can do for you.
Wow. That's heavy.
You know, I hope you show up.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and you talk about showing up. I mean, that's what we signed up for, to show up.
To show up.
And a lot of times, unfortunately, you know, we don't show up.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it could be the other way around. You know, we don't step up to the plate, and, you know, we're supposed to be ready for battle on Friday at noon, and, you know, we're hanging out with the fellas or whatever it is we do, you know. And but, yeah, I mean, both, like I say, you know, both parties have to remember that, you know, this is, hey, we going to war. I mean, we're doing this thing together, you know, and that's just how it is. And when there's some cases, like I explained, where you can't get around, you know, like I say, your soldier was taken out, you know, got an injury, and you don't expect her to show up, you know. But in a case where we're both willing and able, and it's like we need to go to war, as Patrice explained earlier, you know, both of them were ready to go to battle. And but I mean, it's tough, you know, to do that, to go it alone, you know, because you don't have that much firepower, and you know, two is better than one. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that goes back to actually what we were talking to not too long ago about the hormones and the menopause and whatever it could be, you know, that's going on with the female. And we don't understand it, you know, and we be like, oh, she's tripping. But she may not be. She may be a chemical imbalance. And to that point, I think that we need to do our research and find out what's wrong and try to fix it. Or try to help fix it or be understanding, because that's a point where one of your soldiers is hurt. She's actually, you know, not intentionally, you know, trying to cause a disruption, but the chemical imbalance may be doing that. Hello?
Yeah, I don't know what that is. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, no, I'm done.
Oh, okay.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That is a good point. Anybody else?
Yeah, Rodney, I think you need to talk to my wife. We've been in our house for 10 years. The stuff's starting to break. She's ready to go out.
So what are you doing about it, sir?
Hey, I'm just fixing stuff as soon as I can. I went to the burial yesterday, and I saw Daryl there. It was sad, man. It puts a lot of things in perspective about your relationship. That's just a sad case. She's only 12 years older than I am right now. You just gotta make sure that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, because as I always say, they always get on me. But I always say tomorrow's not promised. And that's the truth. It's only the truth. But we don't think about that when we kiss our wife and go to work. But she may not come back.
Yeah,
you may not come back. I mean, that's just real talk. And if you're not thinking about it, I think that a lot of times, and I just actually, this ties back to what I was talking to some teenagers about our decision-making is generally short-term. You know, we don't think about the long-term effect of, okay, what if I don't come back from work tonight? You know, something happened. Or what if I come back and paralyzed from the neck down, or vice versa? I mean, we don't think about that, and a lot of times if we did, you know, we might be a little kinder, be a little gentler, you know, be a little more empathetic and sympathetic, you know, when they are going through this stuff. And, you know, I think that's just what head of household should do, and I think that sometimes it's easy to be like, hey, get your butt to work. You know, I ain't trying to see you today, you know. But, you know, what would happen if that would be your last conversation with her?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And that, you know, and then it goes back to, don't sweat the small stuff, man.
Yeah.
You know, because that, I mean, that's powerful when you're 44 years old and you're no longer here. And there's a response. You have a child that you left behind and a husband, and you're no longer here. And now, but life still goes on, right? So we sitting here arguing about dumb stuff.
Mm.
And now somebody got to deal with that.
Exactly.
You see what I'm saying? You don't wish that on anybody.
Exactly.
You know, but it's life and it happens. But we talking about dumb stuff. It don't make any sense.
Yep, you're right.
You know, it's that small stuff, man. It should be, you know. And I think that's what one of the other brothers was talking about earlier, is that how that's how women, a lot of women do. They focus on the small things, and we don't. I mean, I hope we don't.
Yeah. I mean, generally speaking, I think you're right, Mr. Oaks.
Yeah.
I think you're exactly right.
We kind of take the drama out of it, you know, and, that's tough, man. That's tough.
Mm-hmm.
Emotional roller coaster. I hear you, brother. That's tough.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That there is tough. But, good words. Good words. Anybody got anything else? Done. Andrew still here?
I do.
Yeah, I'm still here.
No, somebody got something.
But listen, it's 10:50. I have to ask before we get off this phone. If you're the only one in the battlefield, how does that affect the bedroom, Jack? Is it boring? Is it, you know, because if the marriage is effective, I'm assuming that the sex is effective too, right?
Yep.
One person's in it, maybe the other one's not.
Yeah. She's not over yet.
Or is it a balance?
Yeah, I mean, I would say one word, passionless.
Passionless.
Yeah.
No intimacy.
Communication less.
Exactly.
Date night less. lingerie less. You know? And so on.
And
know.
So on.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're right, P-Town. That, of course, is going to affect that. Absolutely, it's going to affect, you know, what happens in the bedroom and what don't happen in the bedroom.
Yeah, because you do it just to do it and just to, you know, just to really get off. But, you know, even when you're doing it, you start arguing afterwards. Or, you know.
Or you try not to start an argument before you might get lucky or something.
Yeah. See, you're thinking about something else going through the whole thing.
And
let me ask
you
a question. How important is it, and I don't know if we do this, and maybe we do, how important is it to voice the things that bother you that your spouse does? I mean, just say, okay, these are the list of things. These are the things that bother me, that I don't like.
Yeah, I think you can do it, but you have to, number one, you have to be tactful and timely. And what they say is you give, two or three compliments and one criticism. You know, when you're, you know, making a voicing a concern or a criticism. You know, you don't say, you know what, I don't like how you cook. I don't like how you're not wearing lingerie. I mean, I don't like how you do this. I don't like how you hanging out with your girls. I mean, you don't do all of that in one fell swoop in one conversation because, I mean.
Don't make the list.
Exactly. Because you may end up dying on the battlefield that day.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I think that you do it. You know, you just probably just prioritize what's really bugging you versus, like you said, the small stuff. You know,
sure.
You just kind of just taking it. And then when you do it, it can't be after she had a bad day at work or, you know, whatever, you know, the kids were running crazy or, you know, whatever. You can't say, you know what, by the way, this really bugs me. I just wanted to let you know because it's not going to come over well, whereas, you know, if y'all are in a good space. You know, absolutely. So, you know, you're a great wife, you're a great, you know, mother, or, you know, you're a great employee. I mean, just build her up and then just, you know, just hit her with that Floyd Mayweather or something. You know, just be like, but this really bugs me.
Make sure you got thick skin because 9 times out of 10, she's going to come back with her own list.
There you go.
Yeah, and if you do it like Floyd Mayweather, make sure she's looking.
Yeah.
And yourself.
Yeah, always protect yourself, right? Mm.
Yeah, but like Andrew said earlier about the contract, and that works for him because now you have something you can pull out and say, okay, this is what we both signed. In the beginning, I would think would be the time to say, okay, these are the things that I don't like. These are the things that I can do without, and they'll know up front. So then they'll be more cautious of, you know, going in that direction.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of times we try to keep the peace and we just endure it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think you run the risk if you do, in the beginning, you know, state, you know, what you know, the long list of your don't likes. I think
it don't have to be
the
long list. It don't have to be long.
Or a short list. But I think in some ways you can run the risk of her response being, well, why are you marrying me then? You know, if you got
but you're right. But it's not about the person that you're marrying. Okay, whoever it is that I'm marrying, these are the things that I don't like. You know what I'm saying? And the reason why I'm saying this is because I think a lot of things are left unsaid, and then you have issues throughout the marriage.
Right, but that
you
goes
know, and
back
then you
to...
find yourself trying to keep the peace with something that really bothers you. And I think that goes both ways with them. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, we may come home and play Sony PlayStation, right? And we may play video games 3-4 nights a week, you know? And they may not say, I don't like the video games because I'm not getting that time from you because they don't want to upset you. They want to keep the peace. But that's an issue.
Yeah.
That could have been avoided.
But I think it goes back to what Andrew said earlier about good premarital counseling, because you can have good premarital counseling, and I mean, everything is not going to come out. I mean, we all know that. But I mean, you know, something like that, video games, I'm sure you know, a person that plays video games wouldn't start in their marriage. I mean, that's something you did before you got married, I would assume. So, I mean, that might come up, you know, in a conversation, in some good, you know, rigorous premarital counseling. It may not, but I mean, the odds are if you dig, you know, deep into those things, you know, she's like, by the way, you know, this guy, he plays video games like 5 nights a week. And then you might hear that in premarital and be like, oh, well, I probably need to scale that back to 4 nights a week or 3 nights a week when we get married. I mean, it's just like, you know, you just take a mental note of it. Whereas if in the throes of your marriage, you know, she like, get off that video game. And she rips, you know, the video game, the CD out. I mean, she just goes crazy on it because it's been bothering her since y'all were dating or whatever. But she never, like you said, she just kept the peace. So, you know, I think the goal is to try to just stir some of that stuff up, you know, before you walk down the aisle. Yes, sir.
If she rips out Madden 12, it's over.
We say, Andrew, somebody's gonna die tonight. Yeah, somebody's gonna die. You know, that's good.
I mean, I waited till midnight to get that sucker. She rips it out, we got an issue.
That's good.
Good words. Good words. Good words. Well, it's a little early.
Yeah, that's fine, brother.
Yeah, but you know, we can. If anybody's got anything on this topic, please go ahead with it.
Well, I had something else with Rodney was just saying about picking out specific things that you might not like. What if it's not something specific? You know what I mean? Like, what if it's just personality? Something about that person's personality that just annoys you. You know what I mean? Like, not something that you can say, all right, like I remember a few weeks ago, like, you know, peas or whatever. I don't want it. It's not saying, like, don't serve me peas anymore, but, like, when a person reacts in a certain way, how do you combat that?
Yeah.
That's tough.
It's tough. Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's how they are, and they probably, I mean, I would assume that they would like that when you met them. Right? Yes.
I mean, yes.
I mean, how do you know?
Yeah,
how do you know?
Yeah,
how do you know?
I mean.
Sometimes you don't know. I mean, let's keep it real.
Sometimes. But most of the time we do know, and we just like, oh, it'll be all right after we get married.
That representative got skills, brother. you know, like Houdini. You'd be like, wait a minute, who are you?
But I know in my premarital counseling, he was like, whatever her faults are, you have to be able to take them 10 times worse than what they are now. And that's how you know whether you can marry or not. So if it's socks on the floor or whatever, you know, whatever it is she does or you do, it's like, can you have all of your socks on the floor and you not, you know, blow up, bust a vein or something, you know? So, I mean, but even with personality, I would think that, you know, if whatever that personality trait that really rubs you the wrong way, you know, can you stand it when it's absolutely magnified and all the time because y'all together now? You know what I mean? That's that's real talk. But like Tony said, I mean, it happens. It sure does happen.
It happened. You know, and Andrew, and I'm glad the brother just asked that question because Andrew said something earlier in reference to he may have been talking about another couple that the woman didn't accept any responsibility.
Yeah.
Everything was the man's fault. And that's personality, and that's hard. That's hard.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I just got this crap to work on my end so I can talk now. But I don't know. One of my things is that, you know, I kind of look at this left brain a little bit. You kind of know what you're getting into. For instance, I'll tell y'all a little story that years ago, we went to the DR, Dominican Republic, with three other couples, right? You know, everyone had a good time. Two of those couples were newlyweds, and this is before, you know, my wife and I got married. And so we're in the Dominican Republic. You know, the women have gone off, done their thing, and so just the fellas, the four of us, you know, we're just talking about, you know, our significant others and everything like this. So this guy, he got married 8 weeks prior, right? He said, do y'all ever wake up beside your wife and you look over there, that's not the person you marry? And I'm sitting up here, I'm like, no, what the hell? Like, we just married this chick 8 weeks ago?
Wow.
And the thing was is that, you know, she was junky. She was messy, right? My thing is that you knew this ahead of time going into it,
yep.
Right? And so you can't, you know, sit up here and think that she's going to change overnight just because, you know, you've now locked her down. Like, I've accepted wholeheartedly that my wife doesn't do windows. That's just the way it is, you know? And I just think that you bought it, you know. You've gotten into it. So that's just my thing.
I think with marriage, both of our expectations, they increase, you know, after the marriage. And sometimes only one party gets that memo. It may be the man, it may be the woman. Say, oh, I need to shape up now. I'm a husband, I'm a wife. But, you know, our expectations naturally increase, you know, because it's like you're married now. Of course you wouldn't be junkie. You know?
You hope not.
You would hope not. I mean, but that's the expectation. And I think that's, you know, back to the topic, is that you expect her to show up on the battlefield.
Yeah.
You know, because you're showing up. But maybe she didn't get the memo.
Yeah.
Maybe she ain't there yet. You know? I mean, that's real talk. I mean, I think that a lot of times we think about it in our world, like, well, I got the memo, and I'm here at 12 o'clock sharp with my armor on and ready for battle. And where is she? Oh, I'm going to be late. Oh, was that today? Oh, man, I'm really not prepared. I'm really not ready for battle. I mean, so a lot of times we don't necessarily, both parties don't get the memo at the same time. And they don't, and if they do get it, it doesn't take the same priority.
Well, maybe it's World War III and you didn't show up for World War I.
Yeah.
You know, so that's World War III, and you're like, oh, she ain't here. Okay.
Mm.
Wow.
Wow.
It's a lot of things, man. It's a lot of things. But let's, you know, let's just hope for their, you know, for marriage's sake, that, you know, everybody's on the battlefield together, joined, hand in hand, guns out, ready to go.
One would hope.
One would hope. Well, it's 11:03, and if anybody's got anything else on the topic, go ahead and do your thing. If not, we're going to slide this show into open mic.
Sure.
Have I got anything?
Sure.
Nope. Open mic it is.
Open mic. Please hold.